On today's show, the Cavs took an L in Denver on Friday night. We're going to break down that and break down the start of the trade market quite possibly on this episode of Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidate you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword. That man over there is Evan Damrell. He is the proprietor of Write Down Euclid, as well as After the Sword. Thanks again for making us your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcast. Today's show, segment one and two, all about Cavs Nuggets. Cavs lose that game in Denver to start off this West Coast road trip with a loss to perhaps the soon-to-be or eventually three-time MVP Nikola Jokic. And then segment three, we'll talk about the trade market, what we kind of know about the Cavs currently right now based on a recent report from Yahoo's Jake Fisher. But Evan, let's start with this game. I think the only way to really look at this game is this was not the best Cavs performance. They were outgunned. This was not anywhere close to their best performance. They defensively really didn't perform at a level to kind of keep the game in their kind of domain. Nuggets really just went crazy over the second and third quarters, and the Cavs didn't have that gear to compete. There was no Donovan Mitchell in this game because he took a night off to rest, and that's, I think, it was a smart decision in the long run. But it's a reminder in games like this when you don't have Mitchell and it's just kind of really based on Garland having to do a ton and maybe a good Carousel Verge game, which you got, it's hard for the Cavs to really kind of compete and have that offensive firepower to go toe-to-toe with a team like Denver.
Yeah, I think this game for me was a clear indicator that Cleveland is still lacking like a consistent third option on offense. Like you noted, this was a good Caris LeVert game. Jetty Osman was the leading bench scorer and the third highest scorer for Cleveland overall. But without Donovan Mitchell out there and just the fact that Caris LeVert can be inconsistent at times, like, yes, he's kind of carved out a bit more of a role and he looks more comfortable, but I'm not fully ready to say, like, yeah, he's finally put it together as a bench player or a starter for the Cavs. But the lack of Donovan Mitchell in this one was certainly noticeable. I think that certainly hurt the Cavs' chances in this one. And like you said, it wasn't a great game overall, but the Cavs are at least competitive for the better part of it. It's just like, the Nuggets are one of, if not one of, the best teams in the NBA currently. They, like you said, they could have a possible three-time MVP and Nikola Jokic on their roster as well. So that's kind of hard to really gauge how Cleveland stacks up there just because there is no Donovan Mitchell in this one. But at the end of the day, I just think maybe if you have Mitchell, it's a different ballgame. And if you're Cleveland, at least it was somewhat competitive until the Nuggets kind of just turned on the pressure a little bit. And other than that, hey, it's good to see Darius Garland back out there, even though he got banged up once again. So we'll kind of have to monitor that situation going forward.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We don't really have like a ton of information on that right now. But Evan, I want to continue this point because I don't think it's just necessarily even just like a third option thing. I think the Cavs are, I think, built as a team to have like good to great defensive performances, and then the offense is like average to good, and that's how they're going to win games. Like, they're not going to win games via shootouts. What the Mitchell acquisition does, and what the Mitchell acquisition helps with, is that like if you have like a good, like just kind of like an ed defensive performance, or you go against a team that has the offensive firepower that the Nuggets do, and the Nuggets are like a crazy good offense, like one of the best in the league, and Jokic is that on his own, like he had an easy triple double in this game for Denver. You are in this position where like you had like Mitchell is really the guy in the team that can really help you escalate and get in the and kind of deal with some of those like back and forth offensive shootouts. Like, he's the guy that can kind of do that for you. Garland can as well. He had a good passing game, and they need him to kind of be their best, but like Mitchell's the scorer in that context. Yeah. And kind of a needed upgrade. It's just like when you don't have him, the offense feels harder. It feels like things get a little more, just a little bit more rigid. Like, even though, like, there's some Mobley stuff in this game that was interesting. He didn't shoot well from the free throw line. Like, you didn't feel like Jared Allen was getting kind of as clean of looks as you maybe would like at the rim. like LeVert had to really push the pace. Like their best moments were pushing the pace and not setting against a bad Nuggets defense. Like there's just, without Mitchell, it is just like harder. And like your, the way you have to win changes. And it just does. And look, that's not it's not going to be like a problem you would think in a playoff series if it is like the whole trajectory of what we think of this Cavs team is. But it's so evident in watching the Cavs without Mitchell, like how just vital he is to them just kind of having the most functional offense they possibly can.
Yeah, it is tricky because the Cavs just, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, they are a good to elite defensive team. Depends on the matchup some nights, but they do rank consistently in the top five in terms of just most defensive metrics. So we'll give them their flowers on that one. But they lean, and that is on that defensive identity. That is their core identity. And at the end of the day, like, the offense is really predicated on Garland's passing and Mitchell scoring. And I think if you lack the thunder with the lightning that comes with Garland's passing, it's a little bit tougher out there. Like you said, like Evan Mobley was 0 of 6 in the free throw line. Jared Allen kind of didn't feel like a factor whatsoever in this game. He was 4 of 11 from the field overall. Isaac Okoro really didn't get it going either. Like I mentioned earlier, like Jetty Osmond was the third leading scorer in this game behind Caris LeVert and Darius Garland. So you have to get productions elsewhere in nights that you rest Mitchell. And like you said at the top, like, this was the right call for Cleveland at the end of the day. Mitchell was carrying quite a heavy load. He had that 71-point, like, stellar performance. He had helped battle against the Bulls a couple nights before that. He made it a tough, scrappy game and was able to kind of carry the load a little bit against Phoenix. Like, give him the night off. He deserves the night off, especially if there's going to be a lot of, like, emotional tension heading into Tuesday's game against the Jazz. So we'll see what happens Sunday against Phoenix with Mitchell. But yeah, it's just, it's tricky at the end of the day. Like, I don't know how to fully gauge this Cavs team because they are missing such a key core component. Like, if this was a game where Mitchell didn't exist on the Cavaliers and it was still Markkanen, Sexton, and Agbaji, this might be a different story. This might be a different outcome, of course, but, or it could be even a worse or even bigger blowout too. So it's hard to fully gauge it, but like the Cavs are missing a lot of that scoring edge without Mitchell. And like you said, if the offensive flow like that is predicated and you have to take advantage of a bad Nuggets team on defense, but a very, 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 very good team, Nuggets team on offense, it's tough. And I think also just allowing Denver to go 17 of 35 from 3-point range doesn't help either. And just all the 14 free throw misses are also pretty ghastly for Cleveland. Like, if you look at those two numbers when just checking the box score, I think that's a pretty clear indicator of what went wrong in this game for the Cavs.
Yeah, just a quick note on Darius Garland to wrap up segment one. Good to see him back. Eight assists, just one turnover. Did get kicked below the belt by Bones Highland. Did take a knock to the face. And holding his hand at one point. We'll see what he's listed at when we get an injury report for Sunday, and we'll talk about that on Monday's show in relation to what's going on there. Interesting position for Garland in that, just like it's like it was like a throwback to, oh, he has to do a ton and it's hard, and even like it just gets over, like 1 of 6 from three, did a lot of his work inside the paint, like, so, you know, good to see him back. Well, let's hopefully for the Cavs, like, he is just healthy beyond like coming back for one game after missing three.
Yeah, that's ideally what you want the most out of the situation. Clearly, like, you don't want Darius to be banged up again, but I don't know. Like you said, it is encouraging to see him back at least out there on the floor. Just hopefully it's nothing too severe after kind of the thumb issue and getting hit in the face again and also getting hit below the belt. Like you said, like, it's a lot of things just were kind of getting banged up against Darius Garland, and it was a bit of a flashback and a callback to last season.
Yes. All right. We're going to go into a break here. We're going to come back. We're going to dive into our game awards, which will be MVP stat of the night and play of the night. But first, we have an ad read from our friends. And today's title sponsor, LinkedIn. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. Then you add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidate you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that promo code is LockedOnNBA, all one word. back here, Locked On Cavs podcast, Chris Manning and Evan Damrell. Evan, who's your MVP of this game?
I think there's two clear candidates, maybe three, but I'm going to go with Jetty Osmond for the third one. Like, Jetty was, you know, or at least has been on a very hot tear for the Cavs as of late. And I think, again, if you're Cleveland, like, hey, that's good. We get some bench production because we're struggling on that end of the floor. But Jetty was pretty good in this game, and I think just deserves a little bit of just recognition for the fact that he was probably, other than Caris LeVert, the most consistent three-point shooter for Cleveland against Denver on Friday night.
I'm going Caris LeVert. Caris LeVert played a second consecutive, I think, game with pace, with pushing the ball up the floor, with good shoot, with hot shooting. He was, I think, 5 of 6 the other night, 3 of 4 from three last night. That's just like, you're not going to get that every night, but you're getting some poise, you're getting some positivity, you're getting just some goodness from LeVert. And like, I think the template of how you want him to play is how he's played the last two games. LeVert is at his best when he is not trying to ISO score or score in a pick and roll against like an entirely set defense. He can do that, and like, he'll sometimes like pull a tricky mid-ranger out of his bag or get to the line or like get a shot off and make it near the rim. But he's not like a Mitchell scorer where like, you, as hard as that is to do over and over again, mm-hmm. like, you kind of are like, okay, like, he can maybe do this because he's that good. He is better when he pushes the pace, when the Cavs are allowed, when he's getting into land against non-set defenses. And he's just like, when he lets threes fly, even if he doesn't make them, I think like that is a good sign where he's comfortable and he's just letting those shots fly when they're open mm-hmm. him. And that's like, especially as Ricky Rubio comes back at some point, and whenever that's going to be, we'll see. And like, and he's becomes, you know, maybe the fourth ball handler, depending on kind of what happens with Rubio and how Rubio looks and what kind of minutes load he gets. Like, that, like, his role is going to change. This is the kind of way he's going to have to play if he's going to impact the game in the way he can, because he's not going to change what he is as a player. He can't, but there's a template, and that's what we're going to look at. Okay, let's go to stat of the night.
I agree with your pick, by the way. Like, but it's also just interesting. Like, a lot of the Cavs role players do find a bit of presence with pace, and I think you made a smart point with just, with Rubio just, you know, playing a little bit of that spice and a little bit of that sense of urgency. Maybe that further unlocks LeVert. Maybe that further unlocks Osmond and Okoro as well. We'll see what happens. But that was a good point, and Caris did have a very good game.
Let's go to stat of the night. I'm gonna switch mine to what I have in the doc. Originally, I was gonna talk about Garland's assists, but I'm gonna go with Evan Mobley's taking 6 free throws, because I didn't think this was a good offensive game for Mobley. Struggled, I think, a little bit with Aaron Gordon. He's now not made a 3, I think, since December 17th. 6 of 11 on 2-point attempts. I think, like, had some issues with Aaron Gordon and scoring on Aaron Gordon. And, like, for Mobley to be effective offensively in what he is right now, like, he kind of has to maximize those post-ups and those drives against the fours that are going to guard him. He didn't in this game for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed all of his free throws. And, like, the Cavs, you know, missed 14 free throws, and that in itself is, like, going to cost you a game on the road where you didn't play well. Like, that's more than the margin of more than their margin of defeat in this game. But his aggression and getting to line 6 times is a good way. He's like a 70-something percent free throw shooter. You feel like he's a pretty decent free throw shooter. The 6 free throw attempts is like, on a night where I didn't think he was particularly good offensively, that's a positive.
Yeah, I agree. And my statistic kind of goes hand in hand with yours. It's just the fact that Cavs went 18 to 32 from the free throw line. I think Mobley, at least being aggressive, and it's encouraging he's getting to the line. I think you obviously want him to be making those, but it's not just that. It's just like the Cavs just couldn't take advantage of the opportunities. I think Mobley going 0 of 6 certainly skews this stat quite a bit, but that's 14 points you left at the line. And if you're looking at the end of the box score here, like, those 14 points would have equated to a 1-point win for Cleveland at the end of the day. So it's tough. Like, I know I keep saying it's tough to a lot of things, but like, this game was just rough all around the edges for Cleveland offensively. And I think not having Donovan Mitchell certainly played a part in that, but you have to find ways to maybe maximize your opportunities. And if you get so many opportunities at the free throw line and you don't take advantage of that, you're kind of just shooting yourself in the foot every step of the way.
All right, let's go to play of the night. Evan, what's your play?
It's a pretty easy one. It's the Caris LeVert dunk. Like you said, he's been very effective in fast break scenarios. Ditto for Isaac Okoro, even though Okoro didn't have much of an impact in this game against Denver. But again, the Cavs are starting to find a little bit of a wrinkle here where they do play at the slowest pace in the league. They take their shots within 4 seconds left in the shot clock more often than not. They are predicated in a half-court offense, so adding a little bit of fast break wrinkles works, and I think it allows certain players to kind of accentuate this offensive flow and maybe make the scoring burden a little bit easier on both Mitchell and Garland.
Yeah, it's that dunk, because number one, look how it kickstarts. It's off of a rebound. This wasn't off of a steal or off of anything like that. It was Kevin Love gets a rebound and he does the thing he does, which is probe, and he's like looking around trying to figure out like where he can go with the ball, and he gets to LeVert, and LeVert is just pushing and going and going and going, and he gets up and under Bruce Brown. He doesn't try to like dunk it on his head, which I mean, it would have been fun to see him try, but like, kind of curious how that would have gone. But he gets up and under Bruce Brown, dunks it, and like that is pace. That is just Kevin Love is one of like the ways Cleveland can unlock pace in those moments when he gets a rebound and looks. And some teams are very good at covering it. There's a lot of times when he gets a rebound in the game, you'll see him get the rebound and look, and then he just gives it to one of the guards because there's nothing there. They don't really force that too much. That's a very reserved use of that Kevin Love skill, and it's limiting turnovers in that sense, I think. LeVert is kind of like one of the guys where, like, I think, you know, if he's just going to run a go route and get the ball and maybe get a dunk or maybe get the defense on his heels a little bit, it's like him and Okoro and Jetty are kind of the three wings that love to do that. And it's like that's the way they can push the pace and get buckets like that, or it's like Evan Mobley gets a rebound and like, and does that thing, which he's done a little bit here and there this year, and is when he's kind of most comfortable, it seems like, with the ball in his hand sometimes. So that's my play of the night. Evan, let's go into our break. Last break. Come back. We'll talk about the trade market. Again, the Cavs lose this game 121-108. Darius Garland returns, scores 21 in that return. Caris LeVert led the Cavs with 22. Evan Mobley had 12. Jared Allen had 13. As Evan said, in his stat of the night, the Cavs were 18 of 32 from the field, 10 of 26 from three. Additionally, the Nuggets were 17 of 35 from three. Nikola Jokic, a 28, 15, and 10 triple double.
He's a machine.
Just some light work for Nikola Jokic. But we'll be right back. But Evan, you have an ad read for us from our friends at BetOnline.
You're absolutely correct. Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional amateur league out there, from pro football to college football season to basketball and the NFL playoffs and so much more. They've got it all at BetOnline.net. For instance, the Cavs are plus 1,800 to win the NBA title this year. That's the 10th best odds in the league currently. The Celtics have the best odds at plus 350. The Bucks are second at plus 600, and the Nets are third at plus 750. And surprisingly enough, the Clippers have the best odds still to win the Western Conference at plus 950. And if you love sports podcasts, you can even find those as well at betonline.net. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, so head over to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts.
All right, last segment, Locked On Cavs. Evan, we got a report this week from Jake Fisher at Yahoo, basically kind of about the Cavs and their need for a wing, which is like, you watch them at all, that's like clearly the glaring hole. You know, they've shuffled through different small forward options. You know, they haven't found anything that really sticks. We'll see kind of what their choice is when Dean Wade comes back. Okoro has kind of been in that role right now, and obviously there's some spacing concerns there, even if I think he's played better of late. The big takeaway, I think, from this piece, and this kind of tracks with a lot of the info kind of already percolating out there, Cavs aren't willing to pay like they can't and probably won't pay like a super high price on a trade. So in this piece, there's names like Bojan Bogdanovic mentioned and Jay Crowder, and who the Cavs per Fisher like haven't really shown any interest in. The price that it seems like Detroit is looking for to get Bogdanovic is like a first and a young player that has some upside, and or another pick if you don't have that player. The Cavs cannot trade a first round pick until draft night. It also, in relation to like what they would trade, it's like, okay, is it like LeVert plus Osman, and what does that get you? That's two rotation pieces, maybe for one. Is that something they necessarily want to do? It doesn't seem like they're in a rush to just like dump LeVert, and that's interesting in its own right. But this tracks to me. Like, the Cavs are not going to be in a position to, like, there are names that we will talk about in the trade deadline. We'll probably do like a, hey, pick your dream trades, and it's the names that we've discussed on the show. It's Harrison Barnes, it's Bojan Bogdanovic, it is Kyle Kuzma. It is like any 3.5 type. Sadiq Bey, if you wanted another Detroit name. Pick a 3.5 that can shoot and play some defense, and the Cavs would have interest in. That's exactly what they need. It would be the fill a hole pretty clearly on this roster. The price for that kind of player, and particularly the ones that I think would kind of be needle movers in some way, it's going to be high. And I think this is a reminder. This story is a reminder that probably like the Cavs, their big move is a Mitchell trade. And you're not going to get anything that like feels even close to a seismic or moves the needle. And that's going to be a smaller move if anything happens.
Yeah, the Cavs front office's MO has always been being pragmatic and patient with their approaches. I think that's how they probed Jared Allen for the longest time with the Nets, and then a trade materialized and they got him from the Rockets instead. Same for with Caris LeVert. I think that's a trade that kind of worked for a while. Then once Ricky Rubio went down.
They kind of overpaid for Caris LeVert. So that one feels a little bit different to me.
That one is a little bit different, but I think when Ricky Rubio went down, the Cavs had a contract that slots up with LeVert's pretty cleanly, so they don't have to like shuffle the deck or make this a complicated 3 or 4 team trade. But I'm just giving recent examples. I mean, you can even say like the Donovan Mitchell trade. I think the Knicks just kind of waffling back and forth and then signing RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson to extensions kind of shot them in the foot a little bit because they felt like they were the sure-gone favorites, and the Cavs kind of waited in the shadows. And when the Knicks walked away from the table again, the Cavs came back with an offer the Jazz felt comfortable with working with. But it's tough because, like you said, the Cavs emptied their clip this summer to get Donovan Mitchell. They are no longer flush with assets at this point just because they've given up so many first-round picks. They gave up a first-round pick for Caris LeVert, as we had just mentioned. So it's just tricky how to navigate this situation overall. And that really was their big move. And what Jake Fisher says just tracks with the ether is probably what you've heard, what I've heard, just kind of poking around the league a little bit. Like, there are names available, and if you are Detroit, like, you just signed Bogdanovich to an extension. You also, he's being like very positive, impactful wise in the locker room. And he's also a positive player on the court. Ditto for Sadiq Bey, who's like a younger wing who maybe wants more money than what the Pistons are willing to pay. And I think if you're the Cavs, that's what gives you pause. Like, do you want to take on a more long-term money for a guy who maybe is an immediate fit, but kind of tapers off once the rest of the team rounds out, or like when the rest of the team becomes expensive? Like, you have to kind of take that into consideration. So maybe you look at guys like, for me, like Josh Richardson with the San Antonio Spurs. Like, that's a guy who makes a lot of sense if you're Cleveland. He's a bigger wing who provides 3-point shooting. The Cavs should know this pretty well. The Richardson lit them up the other day from the perimeter last time they're in San Antonio. So like, that's a guy that makes sense. So if you're Cleveland, it's an awkward line you have to walk and navigate. And like, Caris LeVert's contract is probably going to be one of your key negotiating pieces. You may have to use like Isaac Okoro, Jetty Osmond as like a sweetener if you want to go for a bigger name, perhaps. You have a little bit of some second rounders left in your back pocket if you want to use those as well, and those do have value. But you also have to weigh the odds of, do we want to spend these second rounders in a trade, or will we use them to get cost-controlled depth that we can either add to the back end of our rotation or develop them with a charge, kind of like we are with Isaiah Mobley and then to an extent Diakite as well. So it's tough. I think the Cavs we'll look at this. I was kind of given the impression with talking with a Western Conference exec about this. They're like, also, you got to see how this Cavs team looks with Ricky Rubio back out there too. Like, Rubio is able to be a bit more of the player he was leading up to the trade deadline. And he kind of, like we were talking about, unlocks some fast break scenarios with like LeVert, Okoro, Osmond, even Kevin Love, who would benefit from it. And it kind of just like rounds out some bench scoring, gives the Cavs a little bit of an extra edge offensively. They can maybe make this work and ride it out, maybe make a smaller move at the deadline. Maybe they go get some extra ball handling, or they get some extra 3-point shooting, or they get like a upgrade on Robin Lopez for backup big as well. So like, there's options out there for Cleveland, but maybe they don't have to like empty the clip or make more of a quote unquote win now move to just make a playoff push. Because right now you're sitting pretty in the top four, at least in the Eastern Conference. And I think that's a pretty good spot to be in if you're Cleveland. It's going to shuffle a lot and shake up a little bit. Like, the Nets winning, I think they're 24-8 under Jock Vaughn right now. Like, that's surprising, at least, just because the Nets kind of seemed like the season was over at that point. So it's always shifting. Everything's always dynamic. It's never static, but there are names that make sense for Cleveland. It's just, how much are they willing to pay, and do they want to sacrifice future financial and like asset flexibility in order to maybe go get a wing that just kind of makes sense at this very moment?
Well, look, I think it's even just beyond like, what do they want to necessarily spend? I don't know if there's not a lot of sellers.
That's like, that's also the issue too. Like, the teams that are sellers are asking for a lot, and as they should. and the Cavs really can't match those asks at the end of the day. But like, yeah, like you said, like a lot of teams are somewhat competitive, so maybe they don't want to sell. And unfortunately, what Cleveland needs is also a pretty premium commodity in the NBA at the end of the day. Like, they need a wing that provides three-point shooting and plays defense. Like, a 3-and-D wing is, you know, every team needs that. So it's kind of tricky to just, like, ask for that.
And it's, I think, even more specific necessarily than just, like, 3-and-D. It's, like, I think, like, a 3.5 to some degree is, like, what you're looking for. And, like, if you could find a 3, like, that would be great. But, like, those can be tricky, and like the shooting part of it is tricky, and I don't know if any of those guys are like actually available. And it's again, like, the Pistons, like, they should be maximizing whenever they can get, like, a team like the Spurs, like, if they have a player they want to trade that's useful, or the Thunder, like, they're probably going to call like the Lakers or one of these other teams that have all their picks to trade to get something out of those teams. Like, that's just the reality. And like, where that puts the Cavs in the trade market, I think in searching for wing help, which is, I think, the only thing I would give up anything for. Like, honestly, if I'm them, I don't think it's, like, really worth it to, like, use any of your future seconds on, like, a modest center upgrade or, like, another ball handler. I don't. That's not going to move your needle for you. Like, I don't... If you get a cheap wing, there's not a guarantee that, like, maybe you give up, like, a second for, like, some kind of wing, or, like, you flip, like, Jetty and Lamar for something like a Josh Hart or whatever. Josh Hart would definitely play, I think. But like, if you get like another wing option,
Josh
is
Hart
it like
would be a huge upgrade on the Cavs? But I don't know.
Huge is a strong word, but I think would
compared
probably
to what they're getting right now on the perimeter, I think it's a pretty big upgrade.
I don't know if he is. I think the way I'd put it is like, I think JB would trust him more, and
yes,
that is the biggest. I don't know if it's like really just like necessarily like a huge like, holy crap, the Cavs got Josh Hart, things are different now. But I think, like, you would have a player that Bickerstaff trusts a little bit more and whatnot. But, like, those are not things that, like, those are not necessarily moving the needle. And I think if you are not getting basically, like, anything, like, basically, like, I don't think a center upgrade, another guard who's like gonna ball hand, like that's what Ricky Rubio's for. Like it's searching for the wings. That if not, I think you just like probably look in the summer when you can trade a first round draft pick on draft night. Maybe you draft someone and you develop them.
What first round pick are they trading on draft night?
They can 2024. You can trade 2020. You can trade 2024. You can trade 2024. Maybe you take someone with your second round pick and develop them. You can't trade that pick until you get to draft night is the thing.
Yes.
Like that pick, you can't touch it.
Okay.
Yeah. So like you can actually deal it like on draft night, but until then you cannot because their pick is going to go to the Pacers. And look, I know you said they're comfortable. Like they're in the top four sitting pretty. It's not a guarantee they like finish fourth.
No, it's not. It's not
like they're currently fourth. Here's the East standing. Celtics are first, 27-12. The Nets, who are nine and one in their last 10, 26-13. Bucks are 25-14. A little bit of weirdness with the Bucks at times, but they have Giannis. You figure they'll be fine once they get Middleton back. Cavs are 25-15 on this current West Coast road trip. The Sixers are 23-15 and getting healthier. Those are, to me, the top five teams in the East, and I think you're pushing not even just for four, but trying to get to three, and if you are four, you're hoping that I think Philly is five or four, depending on where you are. Like, there's going to be an impulse to make, like, a modest upgrade. I think the whole point of what's going on here is that, like, the upgrade that I think you could say, like, with a bit more certainty would change where you're at and change what you're feeling about where this team is at and what their chances are. I don't think that kind of trade, like, a trade that you're, like, sure will work basically is there. I don't think that's going to be there.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I just don't think a trade that fixes all your problems will materialize. I think there is a marginal move you can make. I think you can work within what you have. Like you mentioned Lamar, maybe Dean Wade is an attractive trade asset too, even though they just signed him to an extension. Like you may have to crack a couple eggs that of these like back end talent that you've developed that could be of intrigue to some teams to kind of mitigate and also just blanket over what you spent to get Donovan Mitchell, which again, if you're the Cavs, you don't regret making making that acquisition whatsoever at this point, but it does make it tricky at the end of the day, because this was still a flawed roster before they got Donovan Mitchell. And it was a flawed roster even more so after they got Donovan Mitchell. So you have to kind of figure out how to make this work. And I'm sure the Cavs will, and I think they're just trying to find a way to make the playoffs, get some experience there. Like, this isn't a championship or bust season. This is Kobe Altman, and I think everyone just kind of knows at this point. But if you can get through the offseason and be a little bit more creative, have a little bit more cash to work with as well, like, I think it becomes a little bit easier when you get to that point.
Yep. All right. That is going to be it for this Saturday edition of Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Thanks again for making us your first listen every day. This episode was produced by Jake Stevens. Now for your second listen, check out Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA. It's available in the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts.